horizontal bar of static expands to fill the view, then resolves into letters. HBO. Points of light come together to form words. HBO documentary films. Low-slung city buildings stand on a sandy hillside dotted with trees. HBO documentary films presents. People move through a plaza lined with palm trees. Tel Aviv, Israel, March 2022. A white man with neck-length blonde hair and a bald man sit at an outdoor cafe table with another, mostly unseen man, Ronan Farrow, reporter.
So you have agreed to talk, but you want to make sure your face isn't shown and your voice isn't identifiable. We'll make sure that you're protected in those ways.
Thank you.
So you're hacking these phones. What kinds of reactions did you get?
It's jaw-dropping. It's very impressive the first time that you see.
What was the pitch that you were offering these governments?
Usually we had like one iPhone, one Android device. Mm-hmm. We used to demonstrate how we can exfiltrate the data from those devices, actively take snapshots of the screen or pictures from the camera, actively record through the microphones.
What should the average citizen in any country in the world know about this company and this technology?
It's very powerful. It's very inclusive.
Should people be concerned?
Yeah.
The title appears in red letters over black. Surveilled. In their office at One World Trade Center in New York, New York, David Remnick, editor, The New Yorker, records The New Yorker Radio Hour, reading off a script. Ronan sits across from him.
The software Pegasus is perhaps the most notorious spyware in the world. It allows law enforcement officials or government authorities to secretly hack into a target's smartphone. And that gains you access to photos, videos, messages. Pegasus can also remotely control a phone's microphone and camera, all without any indication at all that a hack has occurred. New Yorker contributor Ronan Farrow has a new piece out about Pegasus and the company that makes it. So Ronan, let's just begin from the beginning. What drew you to this story above all other stories?
Well, as you know, I tangled with some old school private investigation tactics and surveillance. And we reported on that in the magazine.
I had worked on a series of investigative stories that pissed off people with a lot of resources. Some of what they threw at me was traditional, on the ground, spies following me around. But there was also this digital surveillance I ran into. Like, those spies used my phone's GPS data to track me. I realized that the bleeding edge of surveillance is these digital tools, and that they are getting way more powerful.
Outside, New Yorkers use their smartphones.
The most advanced spyware can turn your smartphone into a spy in your pocket. It can copy everything, your photos, your texts, your emails, even if you're using encrypted apps. It can turn on your camera, your microphone. It can record you without you ever knowing, and then just disappear without a trace.
In a dark office, Ronan types on a laptop.
Private commercial spyware companies are selling these tools mostly to governments. It's a booming multi-billion dollar industry, and a war is being waged over the future of this technology.
San Francisco, California.
See, to infect your phone, spyware has to go through the apps on it. So the Silicon Valley companies that control those apps, they're in this battle to defend themselves against incoming digital fire.
WhatsApp headquarters, Menlo Park, California.
In May of 2019, engineers at WhatsApp discovered suspicious code hidden within the instructions that get sent to their servers to initiate calls. At the time, Claudiu Gheorghe was the lead engineer responsible for WhatsApp voice and video calling.
Ronan interviews Claudiu.
You were really on the front lines of this hack. What was on the line for you as you launched into this crisis?
I felt directly responsible because it's a product that I built from scratch.
Someone had found a hole in essentially your work, right?
Yeah, and that was really personal. I was really motivated to fix it, and not just to fix it. I think what was really important to me starting that day was understanding the attack.
So when you're setting up WhatsApp calls, there's routine messages that go back and forth between the user and your servers. And in one of these messages, there was something weird.
At that point, it wasn't clear that this is something intentional. However, what we ended up finding was actually the tip of the iceberg.
At what point was there kind of a first all hands on deck emergency meeting about this?
The first meeting that I had was maybe around 10 a.m. with the security team. Everything was on fire at that point and on high alert status.
People work in the WhatsApp office.
It took just over a week for WhatsApp to patch its servers and release an update for the app, blocking the attacks. Then they went public, announcing that at least 1,400 WhatsApp users had been targeted with commercial spyware made by the Israeli company NSO Group.
Newscasts play.
WhatsApp is urging its 1.5 billion users to update the app right now.
NSO Group has been accused of being responsible for the hack. They deny it.
NSO is the most infamous vendor in the growing spyware market. The company says it developed its Pegasus spyware to help governments fight crime and terrorism. Famously, it's been reported that it was used to capture Mexican drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. But there have also been years of allegations that Pegasus has been used to target journalists, human rights activists, and political dissidents.
Royalty and heads of state are some of the 50,000 people around the world who may have had their smartphones hacked. That's according to a new report by 17 media organizations.
An investigation published Sunday in the Washington Post says the spyware at play is called Pegasus and was licensed to governments by a private Israeli tech firm.
It was used to track and target Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was critical of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
It was at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul that Jamal Khashoggi met his brutal end. He was strangled as soon as he entered the building by a team of Saudi assassins who then dismembered his body.
I can guarantee to you, our technology was not used on Jamal Khashoggi or his relatives.
In November 2021, I was reporting on all of this and trying to get answers out of NSO and its chief executive, Shalev Julio. That's when the Biden administration placed NSO on a Commerce Department blacklist.
A newscast.
NSO's inclusion on the U.S. blacklist does make business a lot harder,
with other firms now maybe needing to think twice before doing business with them for fear of violating regulations.
The next day, NSO's spokesperson called me and asked me to meet with Shalev in New York.
On a city sidewalk, Ronan walks with a black-haired woman of Asian descent, Eunjin Lee, producer.
Will you have your phone on in the meeting?
I'll try. I'll ask.
They cross the street. Letters on an awning above a hotel entrance spell addition.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice
to meet you.
Later that day, Ronan sits in a hotel room with his laptop open. He video chats with a bespectacled white man. David Rode, executive editor, NewYorker.com.
Hello there.
I'm in a bar, Ronan.
I thought you were closing the magazine or something.
I was just meeting with a Justice Department official, but I cut the interview off early, so...
so that you could hear from one of your wayward reporters about what he's up to?
Ronan grabs a notepad.
So I talked to Shalev for 2.5 hours.
Wow. Tell me about the conversation.
They're still reeling from this announcement yesterday that they're on this export blacklist.
And were they worried?
They weren't worried in the substance of their answers so much as there was a lot of reference to, you know, better schedule that trip to Tel Aviv quick. We might not exist as a company, you know, which I think is a joke. I don't know that their bottom line is that vulnerable, but I do think that it's a serious moment of worry for them. So the kind of the high level philosophical picture that he paints is this is a technology that's blossoming around the world anyway. If we're not doing it, someone else is going to be. So his case is kind of like, hey, there's all these people doing this. This is the new reality.
Acknowledges the Wild West.
Yeah. And he acknowledges that there is a potential for abuse. But he says we are relative to the competition, the ones willing to subject ourselves to more scrutiny and answer more questions in the press and be regulated. They, as of now, are saying that they'll go fully on the record and actually allow me to bring cameras in Tel Aviv.
It's great. It sounds like a great meeting. It's great you made it happen. I have to go.
Oh, you have to run, right. Go, go, go. Thank you for making time.
Thank you. Bye.
Jerusalem, Israel.
Israel is at the center of surveillance innovation.
An Israeli flag waves.
There's a pipeline of expertise from the country's military and intelligence services into tech startups. And the Israeli state uses some of that tech, including in the conflict over the Palestinian territories. According to an Amnesty International report released in the fall of 2021, 6 Palestinian human rights activists had their phones hacked using Pegasus.
Ronan gets out of a cab.
Knesset member Sami Abu Shahadeh says that's part of a long history of surveillance of Palestinian citizens.
So it was reported a few months ago that Pegasus from NSO Group was found on the phones of 6 Palestinian human rights activists. The defense minister claimed these were subjects of terrorism investigation. Yeah, no.
So Israel...
Ronan interviews Sami.
Unfortunately, has been doing this for its citizens, mainly for the Arab Palestinians. I think what is making Israel so important in this destruction industry is that they have a huge laboratory to work in. And they are using the Palestinian people to do their tests, and then they sell it to the rest of the world.
Israel says it uses surveillance for self-defense and national security.
A camera points down from a tall post. In Tel Aviv, Ronan rides in a car.
I started talking to NSO in 2019.
He marks a document.
It wasn't until 2022 that they agreed to let me do some reporting inside their headquarters in Tel Aviv.
He gets out and heads into a building.
Most companies that do this work are pretty secretive, but NSO has always courted the press, up to a point.
In a lobby.
Hi there, Ronan Farrow.
You have an appointment?
Yes, with NSO.
They were opening their doors to me, but also trying to keep a tight leash. I'd be talking to everyone from software engineers to salespeople. And I realized quickly, NSO's PR team was gonna be hovering.
At NSO.
Hey, Ronan.
Let's take some coffee, tea.
I may take pictures as I go, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So I can write about it, you know, for color. I want to get a sense of the digs. It's a swanky office space. It's very American tech startup vibes. Fancy cafeteria.
Thank you. You want some coffee, tea? What do you want to drink?
Coffee sounds great. Thank you.
Ronan meets with employees in a conference room.
I just wanted to start with introducing our team.
Yes. And I'm very much looking forward to talking to all of you and hear about the working level experiences you have. So this is great. Should we get started?
Elinoy Barone, project manager.
What made you want this job?
Subtitles, Illinois. Everyone is mission-focused. Despite what the headlines say, the people here do real work and make the world a better place.
What specifically do you think people have gotten wrong?
I think people don't understand that we're not doing mass surveillance here. We're not looking to breach the privacy of innocent people. In the end, this product is here to change the world. Yochai Menoff, client executive.
You have been involved in relationships where there's been some kind of a finding or at least a suspicion that there was inappropriate targeting. What would you say to the targets of that kind of misuse of your technologies?
Yochai, inappropriate use of the system, intercepting a person's phone with no just cause, bothers me. Their privacy is as important to me as my own. But we need to compare the cost we might pay if we don't get into the phone of a criminal, murderer, or pedophile. Omer Len, project management.
How have you navigated the sort of moral questions being raised about your work in such a public way?
Omer, I'm happy that I work at a company that investigates these allegations without hesitation. The investigations are handled by our legal department. I have full faith in them, and whenever they decide to drop a client, they do so.
Leo is Michelson, analytics.
You know, what happens in a case where maybe the government thinks these are criminals, but outside observers say, hey, those are activists?
I'm a tech guy and I'm an intelligence guy. Okay, I know how to create investigation systems, and now I can know how to make it technically the best way possible. Okay, the question I'm asking now, this is for the big guys later on.
NSO claims that potential customers are thoroughly vetted, and it emphasizes that each sale needs to be approved by the Israeli Department of Defense. General Counsel Shmuel Sunray is in charge of that compliance process and of the internal investigations the company says it conducts when there's an allegation of abuse. Hello.
Hi.
Thank
Pleasure
you
to have
again
you here.
For doing this. Yes, it's good to be here. It's an interesting time to be here. You're up against a pretty widespread perception that this talk of compliance efforts and internal investigations is viewed as being non-substantive.
First of all, the efforts are truly substantive. Unfortunately, I think one of the main problems we have on the perception side is that all the good work that we do cannot be published in its details. I mean, we cannot share, like when we disqualify a certain customer for a due diligence reason, or we shut down a system for a misuse. Even if we would have wanted to, we're prohibited from doing so.
As you might imagine, in the course of this reporting, I'm going to be talking to quite a few targets of NSO's technology, some of whom, you know, really feel that this was destructive in their life. What would you say to targets of Pegasus and other NSO software?
Anyone who feels he's a target, I would really appeal for them to go and go through our process. And I think that our record has proved itself. We, you know, don't want our technology to go and be used in such a way that if it was our technology that was used, we feel very bad about it, and we'll make our utmost to make sure that no other targets will be in that situation.
I asked Sunray repeatedly to give me specifics about these investigations or proof that contracts had been canceled as a result. He declined.
Ronan walks down a hallway.
Should we break for lunch?
Yeah, we'll have a break, yeah. So you can come here into Shalev's office. Come without the camera.
This is the Shalev suite.
I convinced Shalev Julio, the CEO, to go on the record for my New Yorker article, but he refused to appear on camera. When I pressed him about the allegations of abuse, he also wouldn't provide specifics about the company's internal investigations, citing the privacy of NSO's clients. Both he and Sunray compared their company to an arms dealer, just in a field that doesn't yet have regulations like the Geneva Conventions.
On a new day, Ronan walks through the city.
I needed to find unvarnished takes on how NSO really operates. One of the calls I made was to Israeli journalist Chaim Levinson.
At an outdoor cafe.
What has the experience of reporting on NSO been like for you?
At the beginning, they were very closed. They didn't talk to journalists. You're all against us. You don't understand. It's a security issue, etc. But lately, in the last year, they become very friendly.
Do you buy what NSO is selling to journalists and governments around the world when they say, you know, yes, there have been some missteps, but we want to be and we are now the good guys?
I think they understand that in a very, very, very bad PR situation. And the previous policy didn't work. And now they're thinking if they explain to the people what exactly they're doing, it will help them. You ask me if it helped them. The problem is not the PR. The problem is the issue. NSO can hack your phone with zero-click technology. And this is a tool that until NSO, only very industrial countries had, United States, Security Services of Israel, but for countries like Angola, it's impossible to develop such a technology. They don't have the human resources to breach Apple and Google engineers.
What makes NSO special?
They're willing to sell to a country with a huge democracy and human rights problems. Other companies are not willing to sell, and NSO are.
Ronan follows Chaim.
Chaim introduced me to something rare. A former employee who had first-hand knowledge of NSO's sales efforts and was willing to speak without the company's permission, if I promised to conceal their identity. Is there anything specific that makes you fearful of how they would react if they did see your face and your identity?
It's a very powerful company. It's very powerful people.
So tell me from your standpoint why you think it's important to have this conversation.
I worked in NSO, and some of the things there that I experienced, I didn't feel comfortable with.
What's the most objectionable thing that you saw in your time at the company?
I think it was the Khashoggi, the journalist, murder. I chose to let the company right after that happened. I can share that many of my colleagues decided to leave the company at that stage. This was one of the major events that I think caused many of the employees to like wake up and understand what's going on around.
So you sold Pegasus to these different governments?
Yeah, I didn't sell. I was demonstrating Pegasus.
You pitched Pegasus to governments around the world.
Yeah.
What were the main customers that you saw the company deal with? They claim most Western European countries use them.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Many, many Western European countries.
Some examples?
Spain, Italy, Netherlands.
And beyond Europe, any examples that were sort of significant in your mind or that gave you pause?
Like the Emirates,
mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia, Kuwait.
Any African?
African. I was less involved in Africa, but many African countries.
What was the price tag on this? What was NSO charging for Pegasus?
This was one of the points that I had a real problem with, because they charged such a different amount for a European country. They could charge 10 million, and for a country in the Middle East, they could charge like 250 million for the same product. One of the moral problems that I had with the activity of the company was that when they understood that they had misuse in those countries that they sold to in enormous amounts of money, then the decision to shut down the service for that specific country became much, much harder. That's where it becomes complicated to enforce everyone equally or treat everyone equally.
Ronan takes notes.
Does NSO know that some of its customers that it's selling to for those big ticket prices you mentioned are abusing this technology?
I think definitely, yes. Definitely.
In a hotel room, Ronan takes a call. Voice of Oded Hershkovitz, spokesperson, NSO Group.
Hi, Oded.
Hi, Ronan. How are you?
More importantly, how are you?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I understand you called former employees of NSO and asked them to work with you or interview or something like this. And we got it.
Yeah, as you can imagine, I'm going to call everyone around the story. I think it's been a fairly short list of formers, but, you know, if there's anyone you suggest I add to that list, I welcome it.
Not all the people of the company think the same things. And I worked very hard in the last year. Mm-hmm. It's very important to me, and I think for us, it will be very good. But please, I ask if you can be, you know, openly with us and say who you from the company that will not be embarrassed. We got the phone. Speak with us.
Yeah, Oded, you know, I'm always an open book on this stuff. We've talked about this at length. I have been very glad to see that I think you're savvy about knowing that more transparency is a good thing for NSO at this point. I know it's been a kind of a hard time with a lot of controversy. Anytime you have a concern, you know, raise it, and I'll answer honestly.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Bye,
Ronan. Bye.
Later, Ronan joins a video conference with three others.
Though NSO was wary of me speaking to its former employees, the company was willing to let me speak to one of its current Western European clients.
Tal Agam, Global Sales, NSO Group.
Hello.
He's supposed to be 10 minutes late. He's on his way
to
his laptop right now.
How many other outlets has our friend who's about to come on spoken to in this way?
No one?
Oded.
I was assuming that he was the source of the Wall Street Journal article, because I think that was also a Western European law enforcement.
We have several customers from Western Europe, but we don't have a lot of customers that are willing to speak with a journalist.
I will need to know his full name and identity and everything.
Yeah, only for your knowledge.
Yes, you don't have to worry. If I verbally agree that a source is an unidentified background source, you know, described as a European intelligence official, then that is that's the ground rule.
Yes, you can even say, you know, West European law enforcement agency. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
Will not expose the name of the country, the agency, or of course, his name.
Tal, is it joining?
He's connecting right now.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate your taking the time.
Nice to meet you.
So, when did your agency first become a customer of NSO?
It was a long time ago, 2015, something like this, because we were in the process to increase our capacity to be able, in very restricted situations, to listen to specific criminals and terrorist groups. And this is when we heard for the first time of NSO.
How much did you pay for the software?
I'm sorry, but I'm not going to explain how much did I pay, because it's on a secret light country. So not a lot of people know about it.
Tens of millions of euros? What's the...
Oh, it was less than that.
Okay, understood. And what type of product did you purchase? Is this Pegasus primarily?
Yes.
And what is the software being used for?
We are just using this kind of capacities to fight against organized crime and terrorism.
Do you think it would be a scandal if it was known widely that you were using Pegasus?
No, I don't think so. And I'm sure in my country, if we have to explain that we are doing things to intercept communication, the population accepts it because they know that we are protecting them against the bad people.
Do you have to get a warrant to use Pegasus?
Yes, of course. And the warrant has to describe that we may use some product to intercept the communication of the source. But we are not describing that we are using NSO or another product.
And how many people have you targeted since 2015 with Pegasus?
Sorry. I have to make a count on this.
Roughly.
The client's blank screen simply reads NSO client.
200, something like this, or more than that. Okay, so I hope that you get the information you wanted to have.
Very helpful.
I wish you very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Okay. Are we all dispersing now?
And sorry for the mistake.
Oh, yeah, I saw. So it's two journalists he talked. Do you remember which ones? He was the Wall Street Journal source.
It was one of the Wall Street Journal and one is Israeli.
An Israeli one. Okay, got it. Okay, this is very helpful to know. Thank you again, everyone. Okay, take care.
I don't doubt these law enforcement officials when they tell me they love having such a powerful surveillance tool. And that they sincerely want to use it to ensnare criminals. But there is evidence that Pegasus is being used in at least 45 countries, and it's mostly happening under a veil of secrecy, without public input or oversight. Pegasus might have lived up to the promise that it's undetectable, if it weren't for a group of researchers in Canada.
Toronto, Canada. Newscasts play.
The vast majority of what we know about NSO abuse comes from researchers at the University of Toronto's Citizen Lab.
They have found examples of the spyware being used to conduct surveillance on dissidents, human rights activists, and journalists around the world.
Ron Deibert.
Hey.
Ronan, how are you doing?
It's great to finally meet you.
Great to meet you too.
Thanks for letting us into the inner sanctum.
Of course.
For more than a decade, Ron Deibert and the team at Citizen Lab have been studying the pieces of malicious code known as exploits that target vulnerabilities in your phone's apps or operating system to install spyware.
In a lab.
We're really lucky to have this space. This is the lab.
A sign reads, the Citizen Lab.
These are the spaces where most of the work gets done.
Got it. So what are they doing in there?
We have a person who suspects that they've been targeted with spyware. And so what they will be doing is walking them through how to gather the data that we need to do forensic analysis of a phone.
How difficult has it been to catch these exploits? Because many of them, including Pegasus, are designed to clean up after themselves.
We've been fortunate now to capture several different vendors' spyware in the wild, usually from targets. The one that really stands out for me is the case of the Saudi women's rights activist whose phone was hacked with Pegasus, which is why that excuse that NSO Group and others use is so specious. You know, don't worry, nothing to see here because we only sell it to governments to be used for crime or terrorism. It's not a good way to think about the limits of this type of technology.
How do you see the industry evolving from here?
If we succeed, you could imagine a much different environment 10 years from now where there is robust oversight mechanisms and much more transparency. That would be my ideal world. The way things are going, though, frankly, frightens me because we live in a time where there's obvious, well-documented democratic backsliding. Authoritarian practices are spreading worldwide. I firmly believe the surveillance industry, unchecked as it is one of the major contributing factors to those trends.
A lot of the coverage of the dangers of spyware has focused on the way autocrats and dictators outside the Western world use it. But Citizen Lab's work shows that Western democracies are abusing spyware too.
Barcelona.
They tipped me off to an investigation they were conducting in Catalonia, a region of Spain, where they suspected Pegasus was being used to surveil local politicians and activists on a massive scale.
In the lobby of a vast, stately building, Ronan meets with a young white man.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's also stunning here. I was not fully expecting that. Elias Campo was born here. He's worked in Silicon Valley for WhatsApp and for Telegram. And now he's Citizen Lab's investigator on the ground in Catalonia.
A few people from Catalonia messaged me and say, hey, I just received this message on WhatsApp about being targeted or being hacked at some point. And I don't know if it's real or not. I contacted my ex-colleagues at WhatsApp. They told me that they couldn't communicate anything with me because of privacy issues, but that I should contact Citizen Lab and see if I could help. So I reached out to Citizen Lab. The conversation went that these cases from WhatsApp were probably just the tip of the iceberg. And that if we organized a little bit and had some kind of strategy, we'd probably find more.
Why should people around the world care about the hacking that you're documenting here in Catalonia?
So this is going to be one of the first cases where there's such a large and vast number of affected people and from a vast and different type of categories of society. So we've had the Parliament of Catalonia targeted. We've had the government of Catalonia targeted. We've had lawyers targeted. We've had civil leaders of cultural organizations of Catalonia targeted.
This is not some future Orwellian scenario. It happened here. It's happening here.
It's happening here.
A skateboarder rides past a statue.
Citizen Lab suspects that people in Catalonia are being targeted for political reasons. Catalonia is a semi-autonomous region in Spain, with Barcelona as its capital. There's a significant segment of the population there that wants Catalonia to be an independent country.
2017, people wave Catalan flags.
In 2017, Catalan leaders organized a referendum where they asked voters to decide if the region should be independent. The Spanish government in Madrid declared the referendum illegal.
Police attack crowds.
And they even raided polling sites on election day.
Parliament of Catalonia, Barcelona, Spain.
Tensions are still pretty high today between Catalonia and Madrid. And there's a lot of Catalan politicians that still favor independence.
Inside, Elias opens a laptop.
I joined Elias in the Parliament of Catalonia, where he was testing politicians' phones.
Ronan takes off his bag and sits.
Walk me through what you've been doing and what you're finding with these ones.
Yeah, so we analyzed the device.
Yeah.
And we try to find traces that there was the malware at some point in that device. And how we do that is through some analysis on the device. We extract the file and uploading it to the cloud, and the cloud is doing the analysis
of trying to find traces.
So what's next? You have members of parliament coming in, right?
Yeah, a European member of the parliament is currently in Barcelona, and his name is Jordi Soler, and we're going to talk to him and look at his device now.
Great.
Jordi Soler y Ferrando, member European Parliament, and Laura Castell Fort, senator, Spanish Senate, join Elias.
Hola, Laura.
Elias, why don't you grab a seat and I'll explain the process. The politicians sit. Jordi scrolls on his phone. Elias, the iPhone will generate a diagnostic file which won't include personal data. Ronan sits aside, taking notes. Elias takes Jordi's phone, then hands it back to him. Elias, we just received confirmation that your phone was hacked twice. Once on the 11th of June, and then again on the 27th of June.
Jordi, 2020.
Elias, 2020. Elias shifts in his seat.
When does it look like you were infected?
I have to check the date, but around that day, I was appointed member of the European Parliament.
How do you feel knowing that you may have been compromised in this way?
Well, I feel surprised and angry at the same time. And it's somehow it's ironic because next week in the European Parliament, we are going to vote to set up an inquiry committee on Pegasus. So it's only ironic that just a few days before I learned as member of the European Parliament that I've been infected by Pegasus.
What about you, Elias? What goes through your mind each time you see a positive result pop up on that screen?
I think about the gravity of the situation, and especially these cases where there are members of the European Parliament, because it affects 450 million people, citizens, and their violation of the rights. It's each time we discover one is similarly intense in terms of realizing the importance of it and the gravity of it.
Why do you think you were hacked?
Well, I've been hacked for sure because I am a pro-independence. So I'm sure that there is the will here to keep under control politicians representing the will for independence in Catalonia in several institutions.
Are you looking at any legal remedies? Do you think that you'll bring suit in some way?
I'll defend my rights until the end.
Jordi tightens his lips.
Jordi wasn't alone. Elias was steadily uncovering more and more infections on the phones of activists and lawyers and politicians. And it also wasn't just Pegasus. These tests were turning up evidence that the Catalans were also being targeted with other forms of spyware from competing companies. One day, Citizen Lab found evidence of something rare. A local activist had a spyware infection on his personal laptop that was still live and in the middle of its attack.
A gray-haired white man.
Hello, Joan. It's great to finally meet in person.
Joan, it's my pleasure.
Joan Matamala is an activist connected to separatist politicians. His laptop was infected by spyware made by another Israeli company called Candiru. Elias worked to try to exfiltrate the software and study it before it self-destructed.
Joan, come in and take a seat.
This is where you were sitting when you learned about the hack.
He was working over there when he received the call that he currently had a live infection.
And what date and time was this?
February 2021.
Joan, I have a video. Joan plays a video on his phone.
Tell me what you did from there.
He took some time to get the aluminum foil. He wrapped two computers.
Joan wraps computers in tinfoil.
What's the goal of the tinfoil wrapping? You're creating what's called a Faraday cage, right?
Yeah, by wrapping it in creating a Faraday cage, we're actually protecting the device from receiving outside instructions to have the software delete itself or self-destruct in order to remove or potentially remove the evidence of the, that software was there. It's particularly important to be able to capture the software live or active in the computer so we can understand how it works, how it compromises the operating system.
So he was really doing something that's a service to researchers on these kinds of technologies.
Yeah, his action actually helped Microsoft understand how this particular software, Kandaroo, was affecting this operating system. And a few months later, Microsoft actually developed a patch that resolved the vulnerability that this software was actually exploiting.
It's surprising that just tinfoil can work.
Yeah, it's physics.
Yeah, it makes sense. A little tinfoil went a long way.
New York, New York. In his office, Ronan types up an article on his laptop.
The proliferation of spyware around the world has left governments scrambling to respond. And that includes the United States. Even though NSO claims that it blocks its spyware from targeting American phone numbers, U.S. government employees working overseas have had their foreign phones hacked using Pegasus.
A newscast.
Apple is warning at least 11 United States diplomats that their iPhones were hacked in the last several months. The hackers reportedly used the spyware technology called Pegasus.
But the U.S. government is also a buyer of commercial spyware, including Pegasus.
Internal documents obtained by the New York Times reveal some FBI officials made a push to deploy Israel's Pegasus hacking tool.
So I understand that you did purchase the program and you tested it. Is that accurate?
We had a limited license for testing and evaluation. We've tested and evaluated, and that's over. It hasn't been used in any investigation of anyone.
Washington, D.C.
It's been reported that NSO also pitched American police departments on a Pegasus-like software designed to be used on U.S. soil. Lawmakers are grappling with both sides of this, how to protect Americans against these attacks, and how to control America's use of this technology. Jim Himes is the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, which oversees U.S. intelligence agencies, including the FBI and the CIA.
Hey, Ronan.
Hey,
how are you?
Thanks so much for doing
this.
Really appreciate you taking the time.
Good to see you in person. I know we talked on the phone, but I don't think we've ever met
in
person.
Yeah, yeah. What is your feeling on how much ability the U.S. government should have to purchase this kind of tech?
First of all, it would be a very serious mistake to simply prohibit the purchase of the technology. We need our experts to know what is out there. I have no objection to the FBI purchasing the technology to understand it. Then comes the more complicated question of, do we want the FBI to be able to use it?
Do you think the answer is a ban on the operational use of foreign commercial spyware by the U.S. government?
No. No, absolutely not. The answer is do the hard work of assuring that law enforcement uses it consistent with our civil liberties. We're using a lot of abstractions here right now. I have two daughters. What if one of my daughters were kidnapped? I want that tool. I want that tool. And it would be profoundly irresponsible of me to say there's this amazing tool out there that could fall into the hands of the Iranians, the North Koreans, the Chinese, and we're not going to let the FBI use it. We're going to let the FBI use it. We're going to make sure that they use it in the context of our civil liberties. And, well, will it be perfect? No, it will not. It will from time to time be abused. But the notion that for the first time in our history, we're going to say we're going to let all the bad guys have technology that we're not going to use, that's a novel concept. And when you really think it through, a little bit of a scary concept.
A lot would have to change for it to be transparent and have an approvals process that meets that threshold. That's not the space we're operating in now when this technology is used by the U.S. government.
That's correct. That's correct. And this is why I say one of the urgent things we should be doing, is building the protections around how U.S. law enforcement might use this technology.
In terms of the hacking of American officials, are American officials abroad and maybe in general subject to more attacks using this kind of technology than the public is aware of?
Yes.
Himes swallows.
And significantly more.
Significantly more. And
Are you aware of infections of this type that have played out on U.S. soil?
Maybe the best way to answer that is that this technology knows no borders. I don't happen to know of the deliberate targeting of Americans on U.S. soil. I'm also, I have no confidence that it hasn't happened.
Outside, a sign reads Federal Triangle. Cars drive past the White House.
The White House told me they were still investigating how spyware affects national security. And then they told me something I'd be making public for the first time, that the Biden administration was planning an executive order banning government agencies from buying or using at least some types of foreign spyware.
One World Trade Center, New York, New York.
I'd been reporting on this for a few years, and I really hadn't found any governments that provide meaningful transparency about how they use these tools.
In a break room, Ronan makes red marks on his own article. The title reads, Spyware Everywhere. Ronan checks his phone.
This is Ariella, the comms person at NSO, sending me a thumbs up that she is going to get me a...
He texts back.
I'm going to say much appreciated. She's going to get me a last statement that they have. There's a dozen countries that are mentioned in this piece, and each of them had to be approached for comment, and some of them wanted to comment, some of them didn't. Some of them wanted to only comment in secret, but not on the record. So there's just a lot to juggle with this one, and I've got to hustle and redline the rest of this piece.
In a hallway, a chalkboard sign reads, Quiet, please, we're recording. Ronan approaches a woman outside the recording rooms.
Ave, are we in here?
We're in here.
We're in here, okay.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
You too.
Hello.
You ready? Okay, good.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Great.
With David Remnick.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay.
The woman leaves.
Are you all closed up?
Yes, but like checkers still laying in odds and ends.
It's Thursday. The magazine closes today.
Yeah.
Like complètement.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. I think it reads really well.
Okay, so we're just going to power through this pretty standard so you know what you're doing. Here we go. In your reporting, you've narrowed in on a series of Pegasus attacks on people involved in the Catalan independence movement in Spain. Were you able to confirm these hacks with NSO or the Spanish government?
NSO Group CEO Shalev Julio did very clearly talk about some of the countries that we now know use his technology, including Spain. And in that case, he said, you know, Spain is a democracy. If they decide to use these tools...
That's on them.
That's on them. You know, the Spanish government, for their part, didn't respond to our request for comment about it.
Do you think it's possible to have a world where such a thing exists and it's used responsibly?
Well, we're watching the fights that will dictate the answer to that question play out right now. And one of the things that we break for the first time in this story is that the White House is actively pursuing a U.S. government-wide ban on purchasing this kind of commercial spyware.
Because they have their own?
Well, certainly certain U.S. agencies have their own. But, you know, in the past, other U.S. government offices have also purchased these kinds of tools. And I think there's an increasing understanding that this is both technology that has an incredibly destructive footprint in the world, and we've just got to hope that some of these regulatory efforts can rein in the most destructive effects of it.
Newscasts play.
In his latest investigation, the journalist Ronan Farrow has dug into the spyware industry.
In explosive new reporting in The New Yorker, Ronan Farrow details the 2 years he spent digging into the vast spyware industry. Ronan, my friend, this is scary stuff. First of all, just break down for those who are unaware of what it is. What is Pegasus and who makes it?
The fundamental is it can crack a phone.
It feels like the cat's out of the bag, isn't it? How do you control this?
To your point, once data has been exfiltrated, the damage has, in a sense, been done.
The article is called How Democracies Spy on Their Citizens by Ronan Farrow. Ronan, thanks so much for joining us.
In Barcelona, Catalans march in the street.
The article in The New Yorker and the results of the Citizen Lab investigation led by Elias
had enormous repercussions in Spain and finally helped shed light on who was behind all of this. After initially denying the report, the Spanish government in Madrid acknowledged spying on some of the Catalans. The head of Spain's intelligence agency was fired amidst the controversy.
People hold protest banners with their phone numbers on them. The banners read, "Here I am, Spain, spy on me. I'm free."
The scandal became known as Catalan Gate.
Reporter, Elias Campo coordinated the Catalan Gate investigation.
Aquesta investigació anomenada Catalan Gate.
You didn't just lead the study, you were also spied on.
Sinó que tu també t'han espiat.
Ronan interviews Elias.
On the list of targeted individuals was Elias's own family.
Is your family okay?
Yeah, my family's okay. They were surprised.
Surprised that they got hacked too.
Yeah, so I was having a dinner with my parents just a few weeks before publication. I told my father, we're going to publish this report. It's probably going to have some impact in Spain because it's pretty serious. And so we checked his phone, and a few hours later, we get the results back, and we got a confirmation. The next day, we tested my mom, and we found that she had also been targeted.
So they were following you and trying to get your communications through your parents.
Presumably, they failed in targeting my device because I have an American phone number, and they targeted my family in order to try to get to the information that they were looking for.
What do your parents do for a living?
They specialized in pathology and vascular diseases, and they work at the University of Barcelona and the hospitals of Barcelona, the research centers. So whoever had access to those devices, they actually had access to potentially hundreds of conversations or hundreds of data points of emails, messages, photographs of patients all around the world.
Not only did they have access to his parents' patients' records, they also potentially had the ability to record audio or video of Elias whenever he was in the room with his parents' phones. So Elias started testing the rest of his family members' phones, including his sister's.
At a table with his sister, Elias holds her phone while he uses a laptop. He swallows. Elias, now I have the answer. Do you think it's positive or negative? Elias's sister,
yeah.
That it is positive. Elias, so it is positive. Elias's sister, is it possible to know what they did with the data? Elias, no. If they broke in, they could have access to everything. Meaning the photos of the baby, our family conversations. Damn. The whole family infected with Pegasus. Elias's sister. I'm in shock. I just don't understand the objective. I don't get it. Elias, it's a bit strange having to explain this to you. In a way, it's like I'm saying it to myself. It's hard to communicate this to my family. Elias's sister. I can imagine it.
Including Elias's family, Citizen Lab found that around 70 people in Catalonia were targeted with spyware. Since the publication of those findings in Spain, Citizen Lab has documented Pegasus being used against government officials in the United Kingdom, activists in Armenia, journalists in Mexico, and pro-democracy demonstrators in Thailand. In the summer of 2022, Shalev Julio stepped down as CEO of NSO Group. He went on to establish a new startup in the cybersecurity space. Meanwhile, in March of 2023, the White House followed through on the plans they'd revealed in my New Yorker article.
Wendy Sherman.
Just a few hours ago, President Biden issued an executive order that for the first time will prohibit our government's use of commercial spyware that poses a risk to our national security, or that's been misused by foreign actors to enable human rights abuses overseas.
The executive order banned federal agencies from buying spyware that's been abused by other governments, used to target Americans, or otherwise threatened national security. But it's not a blanket ban on the purchase of all spyware. And in fact, just days later, the United States and 36 other countries,
including Spain, released a statement outlining how they believe governments can use commercial spyware and still respect human rights.
A flag waves at half mast.
I went back to DC to press Biden administration officials about this. Nathaniel Fick is the first ambassador for the newly created Bureau of Cyberspace and Digital Policy.
What do you wish this executive order contained that it doesn't? What do you think the soft point is in it?
I think part of the reality is we don't know that yet, right? You craft something and you throw it out in the world, and the world is a dynamic place. Our adversaries are innovative and smart and well-resourced, so it will adjust as required.
I'm struck by the fact that it contains so little about what we do with spyware. There's no suggestion of once a spyware vendor passes muster through the lens of this executive order, what does that look like? What can we then do with that technology? Why?
The United States uses every tool of national power in pursuit of our interests, grounded in our values. And so we do believe and openly acknowledge that there are legitimate law enforcement and national security uses of these technologies.
There were a number of joint statements circulating around. Spain signed on to one of these statements. Obviously, the administration in Madrid has been implicated in one of the largest spying operations domestically in their country in the world. How do you feel about them being a signatory?
I think that getting countries to publicly align with the principles is always a good thing.
Even if it's hypocritical.
And then we have to continue to hold their feet to the fire, just as we do ourselves, to make sure that we're living up to the implementation.
I've had conversations with foreign officials who say, well, you want us to have more transparency about this. You want us to have clearer routes for judicial oversight for the use of these kinds of tools. Where is that from the United States?
I think the executive order is a statement that everything that came before was not adequate. And this is a very strong attempt to put those guardrails in place.
My perception digging into this issue has been that inevitably we're going to have the first big scandal where this is used to scale on American soil. Do you think it's headed down a path of more domestic impact?
I think we can't put the technology genie back in the bottle. That's kind of an unfortunate reality of these things. So once they're out there in the world, any nefarious use that we can imagine, we're probably going to see. And so we would be well served to think forward in time and anticipate that kind of thing.
Outside, people use their smartphones.
Spyware is here to stay. The industry is still growing. It's going to keep getting more sophisticated, more intrusive, and easier to hide, especially as we witness the dawning of a new era of artificial intelligence. This is still a largely unregulated category of technology, one that will always be seductively useful for law enforcement and always pose a threat to democracy and human rights.
Antony Blinken, U.S. Secretary of State.
Technology is reorganizing the life of the world. President Biden likes to say that in many ways we're at an inflection point where the decisions that we're making now and in the next few years are likely to shape the next decades.
Ronan takes notes.
Commercial spyware is going to continue to shape conflicts around the world. Questions remain about the role these surveillance tools have played in the Israel-Gaza war. Since Hamas's attack on October 7th, 2023, sources close to NSO have claimed the Israeli government is using Pegasus to try and track down hostages. And additional investigations have been opened in Poland and in Jordan. Governments and legislators will be struggling to catch up to this technology.
A sign reads, Microsoft.
Tech companies are going to have to fight harder to defend themselves against a teeming international landscape of unseen adversaries.
The message is that unchecked spyware is a national security risk for free societies.
More ordinary civilians are being ensnared
their most private data stolen and potentially exploited.
Elias's mother. On my phone, I have photos of my patients. I have personal photos, too.
There will be more families and communities upended by this. There will be more urgent need for the work of activists and researchers bringing this out of the shadows.
Ron Diebert.
This is an important issue. I think things are going to get worse before they get better. In spite of the measures that have been taken, the industry is only going to continue to grow.
People use their smartphones.
Otherwise, the only path towards privacy might be living without our phones.
Someone snaps a photo. Audio description provided by International Digital Center. Written by Stephen Christopher. Voiced by Jamie Lampchick. Credits. Produced and directed by Matthew O'Neill, Perry Peltz. Produced by Ronan Farrow. For HBO. Executive producers Nancy Abraham, Lisa Heller, Sarah Rodriguez. Produced by Beth Morrissey. Written by Ronan Farrow, Matthew O'Neill, Perry Peltz. Supervising producer Linda Safir. Associate producer Elena Garcia Diaz Pines. For Ronan Production Group. Producer Unjin Lee. Associate producer Georgia G. Edited by David Menezes. Music by Mac Quayle, based on the New Yorker article The Surveillance States by Ronan Farrow. Credits continue. Copyright 2024 Home Box Office Incorporated, all rights reserved. Logos, Ronan Production Group, DCTV. HBO, a presentation of Home Box Office.